Welcome back to another episode of My White Belt. I am not going to pretend like today isn't a big deal. Today is a big deal. I know that, you know, we live in a culture where we're all supposed to be like, yeah, it's no big deal. It's a big deal. Why is it a big deal? It's a big deal today because my guest is Tom DeBlas. And listen, maybe you don't train jiu-jitsu yet, and maybe you're just in your first couple of weeks of training and you aren't really into the culture or lifestyle of jiu-jitsu. But if you are somebody who has sort of given yourself over to jiu-jitsu and you love martial arts, you more than likely are well acquainted with Professor Tom DeBlas. If you're a UFC fan, if you're an MMA fan, if you love BJJ, if you've ever gotten a tutorial from BJJ fanatics, if you've ever looked up a tutorial on YouTube, Professor Tom DeBlas is like the black belt's black belt. The people that we love as fighters have more than likely trained with him. He has been a professor to the best of the best. And I got to talk to him. I got to have a conversation. We connected. He shared a couple of the things that I had written on his thread and on BJJ Fanatics. And we wound up connecting. And he's such a busy guy. And I thought it was such a long shot. You know, he has affiliate schools all over the country, maybe all over the world. And he wrote a book this past year. He's a busy, busy guy. He was extremely generous. And so the things that I know now about Tom firsthand is that, you know, listen, obviously everybody knows that he is an amazing martial artist and an incredible fighter. But the other things that I'm so happy to be able to say is that based on this conversation, you can tell that this is just a guy who almost doesn't have a choice but to walk his talk. He lives and operates from such a place of conviction and purpose. And he's one of these guys who knows why he's getting out of bed in the morning. And we talk about a ton of this stuff during this conversation. And it was really mind-blowing. I just came away thinking, Tom DeBlas is really, as a man, is the kind of man that I want to be. And my guess is the kind of man that we all want to be. He is able to do this thing where he uses every single bit of heartache that this guy has been through, he is using to help people. And he goes into some detail. He wrote a book that's available that I highly recommend. It's called How You Bear It by Tom DeBlas. And I will put a link in the show notes, but he's just this unusual kind of guy where so many guys, right? Like one of the chief complaints from women is that guys don't talk about their feelings. Guys don't talk about what's going on inside. And Tom DeBlas has this sense of knowing and honesty with himself about who he is. And I think that in the book and in the way he lives his life, and definitely in this conversation, one of the things that he's doing by being as honest about his past and about who he is, I really think that he is freeing people to really get to know themselves and to be honest with themselves about themselves. And it's a gift. This conversation was a gift. It was a gift to me. And I hope that it lands with you the way that it landed with me. You can go through life and you can pose and you can act like everything's okay and you can, I don't know, just sort of be a shut down person who hides and makes excuses. Or you can do your work and you can be honest about who you are. You can really get to know yourself. And in getting to know yourself, you become the best version of you that you can be. I hope that that's the outcome from this conversation. I loved it. I hope that it lands deeply. That's me repeating myself multiple times. Now let's just jump in to a conversation. I entitled this episode, "You're Not as Alone as You Think You Are," and it will make sense. So welcome to my white belt, "You're Not as Alone as You Think You Are," a conversation with Tom DeBlas. Here with the incredible Professor Tom DeBlas. Tom, thanks so much for doing this.
Of course, brother. Thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
I saw this quote. It's a familiar quote, and it's from Henry David Thoreau, and it's simple. "Most men live lives of quiet desperation." And I looked it up. That was written in 1854, 168 years ago.
Goddamn. Not much has changed, huh?
It doesn't seem so. Most men live lives of quiet desperation. And right now, there's a dad laying on a couch. His knees hurt. He's getting fat. And he's giving up.
And he's 100%. Absolutely. You know, I mean,
everywhere.
I think society in general leads people to quit in everything they do. And if it doesn't lead them to quit, it sure as hell leads things to be their absolute hardest. Like I always say, there's fast food restaurants on every corner. You know, life is just unhealthy. The negativity that you see on social media. Now everybody is trying to be a motivator. Like these new TikTok videos, but people who have never done anything in their life. So people are taking advice from people about things that they don't know, have any idea what they're talking about. Are just being led in so many different directions. They don't even know how to start.
It's like, I didn't do it, but you can. And in terms
of... You know, it's good with you. You talk about being a jiu-jitsu white belt. That's something that you're familiar with. You know what I mean? And that's incredible, actually, when you think about it. That you were able to take something that most people look at as like the lowest level in jiu-jitsu and turn it into some kind of inspiration. Like that's a perfect example. Like when people look at me, it's very far off from most people. Like they, you know, in order to, they got to be a black belt. They got to do this. They got to have all these followers. They got, you know, and it seems like out of reach almost, but like, that's what I talk about. Authenticity. People need to find out what do they bring? You know, and what could they give that people could benefit from? So that's what you did. So that's a good thing, man.
I was 430 pounds at my all-time heaviest. There was a point in my life where I had to buy 2 airplane seats.
Goddamn.
And
holy shit.
And, you know, I dropped a couple hundred pounds. And this idea of most men live in quiet desperation, and your point, you made the point that I was going to make, which is to say people quit before they even start.
100%.
And then enters Brazilian jiu-jitsu. What is it? What is it about this thing?
I think it allows people to try something as beginners all over again, that's like a no risk. You know what I mean? I know there's risk in being tapped and there's risk in that's it, but you tap, you know, it's like when we go to work, if we try something new, if we're trying for a new part or a new job, there's immediate consequence if we mess up. Jiu-jitsu is a place where we go to ultimately to mess up and to learn and get better. And there's some kind of emotional connection between physical contact, man. Like there just is, you know, like when we're strangling one another, when we're picking each other up, excuse my language, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. Like,
you know, it brings people closer. You know, like for me, I fist fought my friends my entire life. I'm a people know, people close to me know that, like, if we're friends long enough, like, when I don't agree with something, I'm a physical dude, man. That's just how it is. And I get over it just like that, you know? And I think jujitsu is great for people like me, great for people who aren't like me, because it just makes everyone equal on those mats, you know, how much work you put in.
Yeah. So you and I are like two sides of the same coin. You came out at 19 years old with, I think you started training at 19, right?
Yeah.
And you were on a path. You were on a path to win, right? And you found jiu-jitsu, and you had this incredible MMA career and sort of landed with Brazilian jiu-jitsu as your focus. I came in as a morbidly obese guy who said, my pants are size 66. What am I going to do? And we have both found this thing. You and I, who like probably couldn't be more different, but we have found this thing.
And it's
true. I mean, have you had friends like jiu-jitsu friends?
Yeah. I mean, basically my only friends now train, you know what I mean? And it's funny you say that, because I say often so many great people I would never have had the opportunity to meet if it wasn't for jiu-jitsu. You know what I mean? Like, and it's true. Like, you and I are totally opposite. Well, we thought we're total opposite, you know, if we just went through life and never found jiu-jitsu, but you find not only jiu-jitsu is a commonality, like, we have a lot of the same thought process. Like, a lot of the things you write, I feel like, shit, I could have wrote the same thing. You know what I mean? And it's like, there's a lot of commonalities between people that they don't even realize. So people are like, they need to realize that's what it is. You know what it is? Jiu-jitsu makes you realize you're not as alone as you think you are.
Oh, it's that. That's it. I mean,
that's it right there, man.
That's the name of this episode. That's what we're going to call this episode. You're not alone as you think you are. Some people just come to train. Maybe they move to town. They're looking for something. They see a postcard that says try jiu-jitsu. And they had no idea that what they actually were curing was loneliness.
Absolutely.
So I know, and you're being very generous to me, and you don't have a ton of time, but so the word to whoever, listen, to the killer who's listening or to the fat dad that's listening, it doesn't matter. The mat has something for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely it does. And the thing is, you just have to be coachable. You have to trust your coach. You have to understand that this shit is hard. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't hard, it wouldn't be worthwhile. You know what I mean? And it's okay that it's hard. It gives us a chance to mess up and try again and be like an infant all over again, honestly. Like, you're learning how to walk
every day.
There is beauty in that, man, you know, because the only pressure we should have in jiu-jitsu is pressure we put on ourselves. But there should be no pressure, because we're doing it for fun. Remember why we're doing it, you know?
Our school just affiliated with BTT Boston, and under Professor Daniel and Professor Luis Torres, who I know has actually done some videos with you for BJJ Fanatics. He was
great guy.
He's the best. I had coffee with him this morning, and we were just talking about the same kind of thing, where he's like, you know, been around the world like you have, and is like cut from a different cloth, but there's just like this love and this brotherhood. But then there's the people who have now been training for 6 months and are really realizing how hard it is. So I sort of have a two-part question, which is, for people who are in their first 6 months, what do you think that person should really be focusing on getting great at? In their first, because a lot of people who are following my account are like brand new.
I think defense, you know, don't even like a win for new people, instead of getting tapped 10 times in a round, maybe getting tapped 7 times in a round, you know, like adjust your goals, work on not getting your guard passed, you know, work on, don't even think about being offensive until you could be a little bit defensive.
Mm-hmm. You know? Particular positions that you think are a great place to start and spend time in?
To be honest, I think the sooner you work on your guard, the better. Everybody wants to work from the top, but the top is an easier position to work from. And the funny thing is, the more you work from the top, your bottom game doesn't get better. But the more you work from the bottom, your top game does get better. It's weird. I don't know why. It just works that way. You know, the guard is harder, you know, and I would say for everybody, you know, put yourself in the guard, work on guard retention, work on your framing, work on keeping people in your guard, in your space, and putting yourself in a position that you could actually be offensive. You know, like most people understand, before I could be offensive, I have to be in a position that allows me to be offensive. If I'm not, if I don't obtain that position, I can't do anything. So my defense has to be on point where I could be offensive.
My coach, two things that are interesting about that. My coach came in to our school in January, Liam McGowan, our black belt, who I just love, and he's completely changed my life. And I know that people, I'm sure all tons of people say that about you as well. It's amazing the impact that your coach has on your life. But he came in January and he said, look, we're gonna do everything we need to do this year. But by the end of this year, we are going to be a school that is known for its guard retention.
And that's a good thing, you know.
He's been working and working and working it.
That's a good thing.
So what do you do at your academy when you have people that are in that first 6 month flow and you can see that they're getting discouraged and that they are like teetering on the brink of, you know, maybe they start missing classes here and there and you see them getting flaky?
You know, my I've changed over the years because the more I've grown, we have a very big academy now. I have a lot of affiliates, and like I have to put my time into people who are showing up. You know, I have to, because it's not fair to them if my attention is on the people who aren't showing up. So I let my students know, like, if you're not there, you're missed. I want you back. Please come back. And I'll check on people from time to time, but my focus isn't chasing people who don't come through the door, because I let them know my doors are always open to you. You're going to get great training. You're going to have fun. I'm very big on keeping the atmosphere for people who are non-competitive, very light, you know, have fun with it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who you tap or who taps you, just have fun. So if people start disappearing, you know, I mean, that's really going to be on them. But I think my academy's ran so well that I don't need to convince them why they need to train, you know, like they should want to, you know? So for me, it's like, I'm so busy as it is. Like I just let them know that, listen, you're wanted. You are needed too. So I hope you find your way back.
Because it's almost like it's so good that you don't want to have to sell it.
Yeah, 100%. You know, absolutely. You know, I haven't advertised in a long time, man. And we're killing it. We're getting so many students in every single week, you know?
Your career is kind of the advertisement.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Congratulations on all of your various successes. As you're coming up, when you think about your early days, I guess I'm curious about what parts of jiu-jitsu were uniquely challenging as you were coming up. And now, as you're still continuing to grow and train, what do you still wrestle with, just yourself as a grappler?
You know, to be honest, like, I never got discouraged when I would get my ass kicked. I just knew my day would come. So I think I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to be a champion. I wanted to be known. I wanted to be respected. And it takes time to garnish that respect and that notoriety, you know. And now that I have it, I think my biggest thing is understanding that, you know, I'm not always motivated, but I do stay disciplined. You know, like I don't really want to train hard anymore. My body can't take it anymore. Yeah. You know, I have some miles on my body. I've been in a lot of hard training, a lot of hard matches. And, you know, now I'm enjoying the fruits of my work, but I am still very passionate about it. So I really don't struggle too much, because even if I'm not motivated, like, knowing that my students have goals makes me want to be there to help them, you know.
Every single thing that I have watched about you on the internet, when I'm watching you give interviews and I'm watching you sort of do what you do, you drive the point home that you are here to help people.
Absolutely. Amen. Absolutely. I am. I really am. And, you know, like, some people get the wrong idea. You know, I could be very brash sometimes. I could, you know, but it's how I grew up. It's my environment. Like, people have to understand, we are often products of our environment. So although I could be brash, you'll never see me be brash or nasty to someone who's kind, ever. You'll never see me bully anybody. Like, it just won't happen.
But this is the thing that's unique about you. And, you know, earlier when we first started talking, I know we don't have a ton of time, but that idea of, you know, the, sort of like the fat dad who's on the couch and like wanting him to know that sort of wherever he is in his journey in life, that jiu-jitsu will help him and make him better. You have this thing where you are, you know, undeniably tough. I think I heard you say that in your entire career, you've given up 12 points or something yeah. like that over the course
yeah,
of your career.
Less than 12 points.
So you're undeniably tough, but you don't have any problem talking about your feelings.
Absolutely.
Where does that come from?
I think, you know, I have such confidence in who I am. I'm able to show vulnerability, you know, because it's like you said, it's undeniable. People know who I am. They know what I'm about. They know that I could take an ass kicking as good as I could give it. So why not just be real? You know what I mean? Now, my vulnerability is, as much as I'll show weakness, like, I will get up every day and I will do what I have to do. And I will be a rock for the people who need me to be a rock. You know, my father died. I was at my school the next day teaching my students because they needed me. You know, it doesn't mean I didn't suffer on my own time, but I still stay a pillar for the people who need me to be.
But it looks like you even see your vulnerability as part of your strength.
It is. You know, it's funny to say that because it is, because it makes me more, I know myself, you know, like, and a man who knows himself is a very dangerous man, you know, so to know myself and to know that I do have weakness, you know, allows me to make my weakness also a strength. And it sounds like an irony, an oxymoron, but it's true. My weakness is often my strength because the fact that I show weakness brings people forward to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. My weakness isn't just like, let's stay in a corner and pout. It's like, all right, we're suffering. Let's pull up our big boy pants. Let's get the day started and let's do the best we could, you know?
And like, even leading up to this, I was, you know, a little nervous coming on the call. I'm like, it's like this instant disarming thing that you have that puts a person, if we would never be in the ring together, but I'm sure it's very different if you're your opponent, but to sit and just be with you, you're like a very warm, open guy.
Absolutely.
And it's I wonder why it's so hard for so many guys to get to that place.
I think a lot of men struggle with who they are, wherein the fact is I accept who I am. I never wanted to be anyone different. I know I'm flawed, but who I am, I love. And I know I'm not everybody's cup of tea. I know not everybody wants to be Tom. But like you said, there's certain things that are undeniable about me. You know, like, I'm going to do what I say I'm going to do. I do have compassion. I do have a sharp tongue. I know, you know, but I think a lot of guys worry too much about what other people think,
yeah.
You know, and I don't, because no matter what I do, like I always say, whether you believe in Jesus Christ or not, you know, the whole entire world turned their back on him. You know, and if they could do it to him, they could do it to me. I'm nothing. You know what I mean? So it's I don't expect anything. I just am who I am. And I know the right people will find me.
There's this thing that happens in the last book of the Bible in Revelation where Jesus is symbolized as a rider on a white horse who has come to conquer sin and death. And as a lamb who was slain. And it's like this mix of strength and vulnerability. And I love that you know, I'm a fan, but one of the specific things I love about you is your ability to, in one breath, talk about God's love and mercy and you know, God's power in your life, and then telling somebody to go f*** themselves at the same time. And it's like, And it's like that rider on the white horse and that lamb that was slain is like, it's that's the full spectrum. And whether it's jujitsu or somebody who claims to have faith, we don't need any more phonies, right?
Absolutely not. You know, and I've been through so much in my life where I've been taken advantage of and bullied and beaten up, to where I made a choice at about 13 years old, like, no one is ever going to disrespect me again, you know? Yeah. And I'm very true to it. People will not disrespect me. Like, I will stand in front of any man. I don't care who they are. I don't believe in turning the other cheek. You know, I believe somehow that turning the other cheek worked its way in.
That was a very specific context that doesn't have anything to do with pacifism.
I know people use it the wrong way.
They you know? Totally use it the wrong way. And you and I, sometime offline, we can talk about that because people, you know, but yeah, no, I'm with you.
I think the way those people use it is a way to allow evil to prevail. You know,
and
there's a lot of bad people out there, man. And we have to stand up for what's right, you know, and we have to do so sometimes swiftly and violently. That's just what it is.
I just, you know, jiu-jitsu has helped me to discover a different version of myself. I got my varsity high school letter in Glee Club. Yes, my high school gave those out. And awesome. Now at 51 with my purple belt and training 6 days a week, I see my responsibility to be prepared to protect. As we begin to wrap up, I'm curious about if you have any things that you repeat to yourself, any little mantras that you tell yourself over and over again, or any thoughts on how somebody who can honestly admit that they're not mentally tough, but they want to become mentally tough?
Well, number one thing I say to myself often is it's going to be okay. Everything is always okay. I've been through 1,000 tough times in my life that I never thought I would be able to get through. And I've got through every single one of them. So I just kind of bite down and grit when I'm going through some kind of pain and suffering and know that that will pass. For the people who aren't mentally tough, understand they could work and train their mind like they could train any other thing. The problem is people don't train their minds. Like, start doing little things like read The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari. It's a great, great book. And they talk about focusing on one thing at a time. Focus on a flower for as long as you could, like a flower petal in the book. Focus on one specific aspect of that flower petal. You see how very hard it is to do. But the more control you have, maybe you can do it for 30 seconds one day, maybe 2 minutes the next day, or eventually you'll be able to do it indefinitely. And your mind is becoming stronger because you're working on it becoming stronger. Don't have goals that are too big, too fast. Like when I first started training, a 5-minute round felt like eternity to me. And now I just don't get tired training jiu-jitsu anymore. You know, I could train for 2 hours and I don't even got to rarely roll. But if I do, I don't breathe heavy because I'm used to it. And you got to give yourself time to become stronger. It doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
It takes time.
Mm-hmm. Professor Tom DeBlas, thank you so much for your encouragement of the My White Belt platform, for occasionally sharing the memes that I post, and for being willing to just come on and share some of your heart with me and with everybody who is excited to hear what you have to say.
I appreciate it, brother. I think you're doing a great thing, man. I'm a fan, so I'll keep supporting you.
Thanks, man. I will see you on the Instagram. And if there's ever anything that I can do for you, I don't know what it would be, but you have a friend in me.
I appreciate it. Likewise, brother.
Okay, so that was the conversation with Tom DeBlas, and I think I probably talked a little bit more than I needed to during that conversation, but it was nervous energy, and hey, what am I, a professional interviewer? No, I'm literally just a guy. That's our thing that we say at our, when we're sitting around with the guys that I train with, and we'll talk about if somebody's mad at us. Well, literally, our excuses. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, what are you talking about? I am literally just a guy. I'm just a guy trying to do this thing. But that, all kidding aside, I hope that that was helpful. And I hope that I know that for me, I will be reflecting on that conversation and thinking about what steps do I need to take to really know myself. And to not only know myself, but to honor myself in a way of that means that, you know, I not only respect myself, but I don't tolerate disrespect. There's just so much here and it's so rich. But at the heart of it, at the end of it, I think it's about becoming well-rounded. So thanks for listening. If this podcast is helpful to you, I hope that you will share it. I hope that you'll like it and review it and do all those things that I always ask you to do. I hope that you train really, really hard. I'm so pumped that you are getting value out of the podcast. Next week's episode is going to be great. We've got some really, really cool guests lined up and people that I'm working on. I'm working on one right now that, anyhow, this is just blowing my mind and going beyond what I ever would have thought it would have done. So let's keep doing it. I'll see you on Instagram this week. We'll see you back here next week with another episode of My White Belt.